10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Sometimes it's nice to hear an old guy complaining on the radio.
Congratulations, you finally have a day off. You deserve it. You've earned it. You're a midnight misfit. Now let's go to Ross Coulthart with an update on all things UFO and UAP. The other side of the world, Ross Coulthart, executive producer of UFO, UAP, remarkable phenomena with News Nation. Ross Coulthart, Sydney, Australia.
Good evening, Walter, and good evening, midnight misfits. It's great to be back. Well, we've been warned by Representative Eric Burleson that the Defense Department might be playing games with us, that there is apparently within this drop stuff that frankly shouldn't be there, stuff that we can explain prosaically, birds, planes, things that can easily be dismissed as not anomalous objects. But as I told you earlier this week, the public reaction, not just in the United States, but around the world, is immense. We're now well over 1.1 billion views, billion with a B, of all of the data that was dropped in the first tranche from these UFO files. And whilst there's still, I think, a lot of skepticism that the Pentagon's really serious about opening up about what it truly knows about UFOs, this is a good development. And it's only to be applauded, frankly, that the Pentagon is finally moving as a result of a presidential executive order to actually do the thing that we've all been wanting them to do for years, to actually push for disclosure and to get some of these documents out into the public domain. And while that's been going on, there's been other revelations. A good friend of mine, Jesse Michaels, who has a great podcast called American Alchemy, he's pulled together some very interesting tidbits from a book written by a guy I broke the story with exclusively on News Nation, Jake Barber. Jake's ghostwritten a book called Sentinels of Ether, and it's a book that the Pentagon spent 6 months redacting. He wrote a book in fiction form describing the work that he says he did for the legacy UAP, Alien Technology Retrieval Program. Wrote 120,000 words, submitted the first 20 pages for review by the Defense Office Pre-Publication Security Review Panel. And it's fascinating because what he was able to do was show that what they redacted was what they were trying to hide. And it's really interesting because whilst we don't know what's real and what's not in the book, Walter, what we do know is that what has been allowed to be published are most extraordinary allegations, including allegations that JSOC, Special Operations Soldiers, were murdered by employees of a defense contractor that was operating as a black underworld cover for parts of the legacy program. It does look like there are now allegations beginning to emerge of criminal behavior by covert government agencies, which have been involved in what we now know is an illegal government program concealing the recovery of non-human technology and, incredibly, things like people smuggling. They've been bringing people from overseas countries as psionic assets for programs, people who have supposedly enhanced telepathic psi abilities are being sneaked into America inside containers, given incredible amounts of money, filled with drugs in some cases to enhance their abilities. And the extraordinary allegations that are made in this book, Sentinels of Ether, we don't know what's fiction, we don't know what's nonfiction, but of course, all of this is about to begin to be investigated by the Congress itself. They're now talking about an open public inquiry into mounting very serious, grave allegations of illegality involving the CIA, other members of the intelligence community, and Black World Aerospace private military contractors. It's a smelly story, Walter, and we're on it like a dog on a bone.
Ross Coulthart, News Nation in Sydney, Australia. I need you to deconstruct the last 90 seconds of what you said. You're telling me about very special types of beings that are on drugs, being shipped in cargo containers, traffic, have remarkable abilities. Could you just sum up what you said again? again, because every word you said was stunning.
Okay, sir. Well, there has been for years a lot of evidence to suggest that some human beings, and in fact perhaps all human beings, have innate abilities, that our brain communicates non-locally through the pineal gland. And there are some human beings that allegedly have enhanced abilities to do this, and they are called psionics. P-S-I-O-N-I-C, psionic operators. They're psionic assets that meditate. They use thought to summon, attract, control UAPs. They summon in these machines that appear to respond telepathically. And we know that the US has also been secretly using what's called a dog whistle, which transmits certain frequencies that also appear to combine with this use of conscious human thought to unbelievably summon non-human craft. And the incredible allegation, my friend, and these are allegations that have been made under oath to Congress, are that there are psionic operators being used to summon craft, and then the US military and intelligence community, through private military aerospace contractors, are using electromagnetic pulse weapons, high pulse microwaves, to shoot down these craft, to disable them so that they can recover this non-human technology. It sounds like sci-fi. It sounds ridiculous, but these are allegations, my friend, that have been made at the highest levels of Congress, including before the Senate Intelligence Committee, the House Oversight Committee, and the House Armed Services Committee. They are now the subject of intense investigation, I can tell you, by members of the Trump administration, who I think have realized that there's been a lie perpetrated on the U.S. public and the rest of the world for much of the last 60, 70 years.
Ross Coldhart, these experiments where there are humans that have been souped up, adjusted, that are able to telepathically bring down UFOs, do you believe that that is where most of the crashed UFOs, that's a result of that? Because every time I hear about a crashed UFO and a being recovered from it, my first thought is they're light years away and they come here and crash. How is that possible? And then I realized, well, we must be shooting them down. Is that what that's about?
That's exactly what it's about, Walter. And it goes right back to the 1940s. There is evidence to show that when they were testing early radar at Los Alamos nuclear laboratories, they discovered quite accidentally that certain frequencies interrupt with the field of these craft. And incredible as it may sound, they've developed this high pulse microwave technology to incapacitate the electromagnetic field around these craft in a way that we've apparently known for years can bring them down, can disable these craft. And I can tell you, there've been allegations most recently from very reputable people who've got knowledge of the program who say that we've recovered possibly as many as dozens of these non-human craft, this technology that we're still trying to understand. And yes, I should add, one of the things that they've been doing, allegedly, and one of the scandalous aspects of this whole psionic operation, is the claim that in order to induce the best psionic abilities, they give, in some cases, children amphetamines, speed, combined with downers, benzodiazepines. So the body's in a semi-comatose state, but the brain is alive, absolutely wired with intense amounts of speed. And this apparently, for some reason, enhances the capacity to do this kind of psionic engagement with alien technology. Now, I know this all sounds like science fiction, but I have a funny feeling that in coming months, all of this shady, dirty secret is going to roll out into the public domain. And you heard it here first on Walter Sterling.
My Midnight Misfits. What you and I just heard in the past 120 seconds is some of the most remarkable radio ever in history, because Ross Coulthard from Sydney, Australia, working with News Nation, has explained that there are children who are souped up with amphetamines and downers and are part of a program to bring down UFOs telepathically through electromagnetic disruptions in the atmosphere. And it goes on. That was quite a paragraph there, Ross.
I like to thrill, but I can tell you, Walter, as best as I can tell, it's the truth. And I do think that Congress has now got its teeth around this issue. They're engaging. The gatekeepers are pushing back. There's a fierce pushback from the CIA's Directorate of Science and Technology. They don't want you to know this secret. But when you have a billion people from all over the world, but particularly in America, downloading the files that have already been uploaded to the Pentagon website, I don't think you can put this genie back in the bottle.
No, absolutely not. This is Ross Coldheart. How do I find you online, and how do I find you on News Nation?
No problem, sir. You can download the News Nation app and find us online and just look for Ross Coldheart Reality Check, and you'll also find me on YouTube. Thank you, Walter.
A spectacular Memorial Day episode, Sterling every damn Sunday.
Lesbians in space, Sterling every damn night.
What do you call a lesbian with long nails? Single.
There used to be a radio show called Monitor. Monitor was a all-weekend show. It was came out of NBC. It was an all-weekend show. And on the long weekends, Labor Day weekends, Memorial Day weekends, throughout the show, all weekend, they would say, and the highway death toll is now up to 123. You're on the Monitor Beacon. And it was said in a way, because they were big professional announcers, it was said in a way that it sort of sounded happy. And you're on the Monitor Beacon. So far, the highway death toll is 83. You're on the Monitor Beacon. It always sounded happy. And it was presented as sort of a service. I have never heard anybody in the past 10 years, any company ever say that, here's the highway death toll. I wonder what the highway death toll is. Well, it's certainly nothing I'm going to be looking up. It's nothing we need to know. Walter Sterling, this is a holiday weekend. And what that means is there are two types of holiday weekends. There's the winter holiday weekend. And the winter holiday weekend is very different. To enjoy Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, what do you have to do? You have to walk outside. You can take in the winter air. You can look at the decorations downtown. You can look at the trees on Thanksgiving. Even if you don't have a relative, even if you don't have any friends, you can walk into a church or a synagogue or a community center and participate in a Thanksgiving thousands of places. But this weekend, you have to be invited. Have you been invited? Have you been invited? In order for me to participate in a holiday weekend in the summer, I have to be invited in. I have to be a member. Now, right now, you're a Midnight Misfit. That's your membership. Maybe the Home Shopping Network, which used to be called the Home Shopping Club, which is what it still should be called. That was brilliant. The Home Shopping Club. Brilliant.
But
to participate in this weekend, I have to be invited to your golf club, tennis club, swimming club. Even if you're going to a municipal swimming pool, I have to be a member of that town, or I have to be with a member of that town. You're having a barbecue in the backyard? I can't just walk in. I can't just walk into your barbecue. I have to be invited into your barbecue, or else it's creeps. If you go down the shore in Jersey, or you go to the beach in Los Angeles, I have to be with somebody. As a single man, I can't walk onto that beach unless I'm like insanely attractive. Unless I look like James Marsden, I can't walk onto the beach. It's too creepy. I have to be with somebody. I have to be with a community in order to enjoy these holidays. And that's why I, Walter Sterling, enjoy them in the same way every season, every opportunity. I encourage my children to go out. Go out, play with your friends, because that means I'm going to have the house to myself. That is my goal. My goal in life is to have the house to myself. Perhaps you can participate in that as well. Here's what I do. I can't speak for you, but this is how I have the house to myself. Ready? I make the air conditioning as cold as I can make it. For some reason, I need it cold. And then I pull down all the drapes, all the blinds. I want the room dark, the TV room dark. And then I find myself watching marathons on TV. Mindless, boneheaded marathons such as Storage Wars. The thing about Storage Wars is you and I don't know when it was shot. We have no idea. Those 20 years old, 10 years old, 2 years old. Very hard to tell how old a Storage Ward episode is. Then we watch it, and then at the end of each time they open up a storage locker and they find a coin or a basket or a hat, they always say the following: well, I know George in town who's an expert on hats. I'm going to take it to George and see if this is worth anything. Now, the towns are always far away from their homes. They always have to drive insane amounts to get there. That's part of the adventure at the opening of the show. I can't stand being in the car with you for more than 10 seconds, but here we are driving 80 miles to the Inland Empire. And it's always in California. Is it ever near you? Never near me. They go to the Inland Empire. It's 89 degrees in the shade. They're always shocked at how hot it is. Then they get out. They open up their storage lockers. Storage wars is what you and I are talking about. And they get one thing. Then they're going to go into town to have George, who's an expert with the hats, tell them how much that hat is worth. There's no way in hell they know somebody in that town who's an expert on hats. Producers have done their job. The producers have done their job, have found just the right expert to tell. They take him the hat ahead of time. They give him time to appraise it. Then they invite in the cameras and the storage locker guys, right? Okay, that's how it works. But I buy it every time. Oh, he knows an expert on arcade games. Well, that'll be fun to see what the expert says. I say it's worth $900. Oh, this is a very rare one. It's worth $800. It's only worth $800. Are you kidding me? I thought it was worth over $1,000. No. Those days are over. And then that's the episode. Or they find something else in the expert's store that fascinates them. Wow, who knew you had a collection of plungers? Well, yes, plunger collections are very rare. And that's how that goes, right? But every episode's exactly the same. It's just a question of which storage locker pirates are there, which collectors are there. What's never mentioned on Storage Wars, fascinating to me, what's never mentioned on Storage Wars is that these are tragedies. Every one of those abandoned storage lockers, well, that's a tragedy. Either they ran out of money or they died or their business went out of business. Many, you know, they just died or they ran out of money. But there's no good news. Nobody abandons a storage locker to celebrate. There's no celebration as a result of this. It's all very sad. All right, I'm Walter Sterling. This is Sterling Every Damn Sunday. And you and I are talking about what do we do on these long weekends? Because in order to enjoy this long weekend, what do we have to do? We have to be invited to the beach, the pool, your backyard, your house. You have to be invited. The country house, the rich friends you have who have a country house or a place down the shore or at the beach. You have to be invited. You can't just walk in. Very different than the winter holidays. Many have said, oh, Thanksgiving is so sad. Christmas is so sad if you're alone. No, it's fine. You can participate in Christmas, Thanksgiving, just by walking outside. But on these holidays, you have to be invited in. I'll watch Storage Wars, and the other thing I'll watch is Pawn Stars. And Pawn Stars progressively annoys me because it's always the same rotation of things. Guns, Civil War memorabilia, World War II memorabilia, rock and roll memorabilia. What else? Coins, guns, that's it. Never have I seen broadcast equipment. I've never seen an RCA 77 microphone. Hey, you know what I'm talking about, an RCA 77 microphone. Those start at $1,500. Those start at like $5,000. It's incredible what they are. I've never seen them look at an antique radio. None of that. It's always like a gun or a cannon or a stupid car that there's no way that they can get any money out of. That's Pawn Stars. The other one I watch, if I want to get depressed, is hoarders. extreme hoarders. People who never throw out anything, and we go through their garbage. And there are two types of hoarders. They're the hoarders who collect stuff insanely, and then there are hoarders who collect stuff and garbage, and they never throw out any garbage. And that's a very sad thing to see. All right, I'm Walter Sterling. This is Sterling Every Damn Sunday, and I have an email, and I answer my email, WalterMSterling@gmail.com, WalterMSterling@gmail.com. This is Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
As she covered everything she could reach with wispy kisses, her hands glided up and down her sides, skimming over her moistened skin.
On a star-spangled night, my love, Sterling will come on the air. You can listen to him for free as he plays his kazoo, my love,
Sterling, every damn night for me.
If you want to go to Piggly Wiggly or fight an alligator in a swamp, see you.
I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Story. Thank you. For our first Florida Story, we go to TJ Maxx in Fort Walton, where a woman leaves the women's clothing department, skips across the aisle over into the housewares section, and when she turns a corner, there's a 20-year-old Florida man on his knees with his pants down, fully exposed. She does a 180, turns around, gets the nearest employee, they get security, he's arrested, and nobody thought he was clever when he said he was just another kitchen tool. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
For our next Florida Story, we go to Miami Beach, where Andrew Gillum, he had been running for governor, but the married father of three was busted in a hotel room with a male prostitute and some drugs. Andrew Gillum has since gone into alcohol rehab, apologized for his drinking problem. Well, cops released crime photos, but there's no beer cans. There's no alcohol bottles. There's no Bartles and James wine coolers. There's not even a Zima. There's a big bag of meth. There's enough prescription pills laying around to fill up a kiddie pool. That's weird. He said he was drunk, but there's no sign of anyone drinking. Just a few months ago, that guy was almost governor. Hold my beer. For our last Florida story, we're going to Wellington, Florida. 36-year-old Florida man trying to convince his employer, man, we got to shut down. We can't keep working. You should probably just keep paying me, too. He wanted to get out of work. Can't really blame him. But when his employer insisted on him working, he tried to pull the virus card. I don't think it's safe. Employer said, look, they're not shutting us down. We're going to keep working. We need to keep making money if I'm going to keep paying your check. So he called in a bomb threat. And he was easily busted. He did it from his own phone. I just don't, at least get a burner phone. Come on, Florida man. You're from Florida. This would be second nature to you, calling in fake bomb threats, right?
Hold my beer.
I'm James Parker. Florida Stories is a Spring Rock production.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Memorial Day weekend with Walter Sterling. Congratulations, you found a radio show made for today, not one that was made months ago and labeled best of. Because you know, as a radio fact, there's no such thing as a best of talk show. That's just all bad fish. I was studying one of your favorite shows, Lost in Space. Most young men, most young women were obsessed with Lost in Space when it was on the air in the mid-60s because the cast was hot as hell. The secondary cast was hot as hell. Everybody on that show was hot. And because the cast was fun and there was Dr. Smith and the robot and it was a great show. And it was incredibly easy to understand. And then when it went color in the second season and the third season, it was even more fun. And there were some things about Lost in Space that very few people know that I recently found out I thought I'd share with you. The man who composed the music for Lost in Space, that opening theme, that was John Williams. The man who composed the Star Wars theme and the Jaws theme. The man who went on to compose the music for every epic film, Schindler's List. He was the man who composed the music for all of those movies, but he started at Lost in Space. And then about the robot, you were obsessed with the robot. How did that work? The way it worked is it was in two different ways. If you saw the robot from the waist up, it was just shot with the waist up. If you saw the whole robot, there was a guy inside. There was a man inside. And that man liked to smoke. He had to be lifted out. He had to be put in, but he was addicted to cigarettes. They installed an ashtray inside that robot for him, but there are scenes that you can see the robot is smoking. And what they decided to do when there was circuit problems with the robot, they told the guy inside, go ahead, smoke during this scene. Just keep smoking. And the cigarette smoke that you would see coming out, that was actual cigarette smoke of the guy inside the robot. Smoking. Dr. Smith was never meant to be the star of the show. He was meant to be killed off after the third episode. The star of the show was the dad. And the dad had just finished many seasons as Zorro, an incredibly successful show. He was Zorro, like seven seasons of Zorro. And a big star in South America with Zorro was huge, freaking huge. When he signed up for Lost in Space, he thought he was going to be the star of the show. He was the dad. He was going to be the diligent star of the show. But as Dr. Smith and the robot developed their rapport, he became less and less important to the point where there were episodes without the dad who was billed as and paid as the star of the show. When the show was ending, when the show ended after the third season, which it was not supposed to, but it did, when it ended after the third season, he went to, the guy who played the dad, he went to South America and lived there the rest of his life. Went to Buenos Aires, lived there the rest of his life. Huge star in South America. Died at 65, brain aneurysm. Never came back to the U.S. except for reunions of Lost in Space cast, including a Family Feud. There was a Family Feud reunion. Imagine that show. Guy Williams, thank you. Look, you get to a point where you just have to listen to the stories. I can't remember all the pesky details, like the names of the people I was talking to. Can't go into that. Angela Cartwright, who played the young girl, she had just been in The Sound of Music, the big movie production of The Sound of Music. She was one of the kids. She was one of the children, Van Trapp children. So she was already a pretty big star. Later in life, one of the cast members who became a big star was Billy Mumy, who played the son. Today, he's in his 70s, and he's an executive producer of what? What? Ancient Aliens. He's a producer of Ancient Aliens, a very active television producer. There were some other things about it. The worst episode, ranked number 75 as one of the worst episodes in history, was the vegetable scene, where the family Robinson was attacked by vegetables and turned into vegetables, and Dr. Smith was turned into a vegetable. Other news about Dr. Smith, he, all those insults, all the times when he made fun of people, made fun of the robot, insulted the robot, the terrible insults he gave, he made them all up. That actor made them all up. He commandeered the scripts. He'd show up. He'd commandeer the script. He'd tell the producers and the director, this is what we're going to do. This is what I'm going to say. And he took charge of the scenes. Dr. Smith. Let's see if there's anything else you need to know about Lost in Space. It was supposed to last for 4 seasons at least, maybe 5. It lasted for 3. It was canceled. When it was canceled, when Lost in Space was canceled, the cast was not told. They found out about it in the newspapers. They found out about it in the entertainment columns. They were not directly told. Allegedly, Bill Paley, the chairman of CBS, was looking for a way to get rid of the show. It was very expensive. It was $160,000 an episode, and he hated it.
I do not wish to find Dr. Smith. He insults me.
You stay away from me, you garrulous gargoyle. You bubble-headed booby. I'll attend to you later, you infamous informer. You tin-plated traitor! Just for that, I'll rip out all your wires! It's all your fault. Now you stay here and cover our retreat, you bubble-headed booby! You tin-plated snitch! Get in there, you cowardly clump! Color him yellow and call him coward.
And by the way, it was on the same seasons as Star Trek. Every season, it beat Star Trek in the ratings. Walter Sterling, Memorial Day weekend, Sterling every damn Sunday.
This is the show that's setting the trend. Across the nation, it's setting the trend. It's the bright, exciting sound of Sterling every damn night.
Justin Bieber just came out and said that Diddy and Usher were drinking his blood in the form of adrenochrome. This is happening, y'all. The Epstein Files is not just pedophilia. There's cannibalism in there. They're eating children. They're drinking blood. They're harvesting blood for adrenochrome. For those of you that still don't believe, I don't know where your mind is at, but we need to wake up because this has been happening. We've been telling you that this has been happening before the Epstein Files were released. And after the Epstein Files were released, some of y'all still don't believe it. And I don't know what's up with y'all. Wake up.
The Epstein Files. There's a subtext, a substack to the stories about Jeffrey Epstein, which is that cannibalism is somehow involved. I don't know. I don't believe it. It's none of my business. What happened? What has happened is a phenomenon known as psychological dissonance. When you and I can't get all the facts, we start to make stuff up. We start to fill in the blanks with whatever is convenient for us. We have not been given the other million pages of the Epstein Files. To me, right there, that's news. What are you talking about? Like, what? That was the busiest man who ever lived. Many have said he wasn't a guy. It was a construct. He was the face of it, and there were 20 other people involved. But it was all crazy talk. because we don't know. When you, if somebody pulled out all the files of your life, how many pages do you think it would be? A couple million? I don't think so. This guy had like 3-4 million files, 3 or 4 million pages. And yes, if there was anything really bad in there about Donald Trump, that would have come out years ago because the Democrats had control of these files for at least 4 years, if not more. He was the one, Donald Trump was the one who had Jeffrey Epstein arrested in Florida. He was the one who had him put in jail. He at least dealt with him. No one else has dealt with him. Putting that aside, now that we don't have all the information, we don't have all the answers, what are we doing? We're making stuff up. That was some reporter, I don't know what it was, saying that Justin Bieber said that he was, you know, his blood was taken from him for adrenochrome. Well, what is that? It's, first of all, mythological. It isn't necessarily true. There's no proof it exists. But the theory is that it is a form of blood that is the result. It is a form of blood of when somebody's scared out of their mind. Hormones in the blood at that point can make you look younger and be fearless. And then if you get it from a young person like Justin Bieber, it would be even more valuable. Now, something terrible happened to Justin Bieber. We can blame Diddy. We can blame whoever we want. Clearly something terrible. Here's the bottom line about whether or not something happened to somebody as a kid. Are there tattoos on their neck? Your kid may have a tattoo. You might hit it, but they don't have it on their neck. A tattoo on the neck, very different thing. A truly traumatized human being would have tattoos on their neck. I like the fact that for many years it was sort of understood in the tattoo culture that they would not tattoo a face or a neck. They shouldn't be tattooing faces and necks. But Justin Bieber has tattoos everywhere. Something terrible happened to that kid when he was a teenager. When he was a teenager, he had a big mansion. They rented a big mansion with his money, and all the cops report that every single week it was totally trashed. Bad things were going on there. And he was like 16, 17, not to mention that music. Who needs that music? Do we need it? No. But adrenochrome is a hormone or an enzyme that is a result of a person's blood in a person who is scared out of their minds, truly scared. And then they harvest the blood at that point. They drink it. It's supposed to make them look younger and fearless. That's crazy talk. And then it was drank and bought and purchased by the elites. The elites, people who are rich, people who are famous, and they'd buy it to maintain eternal life, to look young forever. Okay, why would somebody famous and really rich seek out cannibalism? Why would they seek out human jerky? At Zorro Ranch in New Mexico, one of the things that allegedly happened in the Epstein Zorro Ranch in New Mexico, which has never really been explored, never really dug into, was cannibalism. And who would put up the money for that? Really rich elites would put up the money for that. And I've asked, well, why? I asked elite and rich friends. I said, why would anybody do this? Why would they resort to cannibalism when they could go to Bermuda? Why would they do that? And the answer I get back is really bizarre. They've had everything. They've bought the yacht, the other house, the third house, the mansion in Bermuda. They have everything. And now they're looking for stuff to do. And somebody says to them, you know, you could look young forever if you drink this blood. Oh, really? They don't ask where it comes from. They don't ask anything. They just say, oh, and then they drink it. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Hey, Walter, on tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I'd like to explain a little bit about how the NYPD staffs large demonstrations or events during the holidays. So I worked in plain clothes in the Organized Crime Control Bureau. And what would happen is every Memorial Day, Labor Day, 4th of July, you name it, they would throw us in uniform for the day and we would get sent out to these places. And it didn't matter where in the city. So for argument's sake, my base of operations was in the Bronx. A day or two before Memorial Day coming up, you'd get a notification. It'd usually be about 15 guys in your office that you were to be report out to Coney Island on Memorial Day. They'd want you there at 9 o'clock in the morning. So we'd get up to the Bronx office about 7:30. We'd throw on our uniforms or the bag, as we would call it. We would jump into one of our unmarked cars and we would drive the hour and a half all the way out to Brooklyn to get there by 9. So we would get out there and there'd be detectives from all different specialized units, none of which are happy to be thrown in uniform and away from their cases. And then they line you up in groups of eight, and hopefully you brought a supervisor with you, because that's where it can get hairy if you get assigned a supervisor from patrol. And the patrol supervisors, the captains, the inspectors, they don't trust detectives because they considered us prima donnas and they were on our butts the entire time. So after they count us up, and you get assigned a supervisor, they threaten you, we want to see you out there, if anyone's hiding, you're going to get a command discipline, we're going to give you charges and specifications. They read everybody the Riot Act. Then what usually happens is you go out to your post, your supervisor usually gives everybody an hour meal, and you whack it up during the day. Now, granted, you got there at 9 o'clock in the morning and you started at 7:30, but you're not going to leave there until the night shift comes in, and if there's a shooting or a stabbing, you could be there all night. And when you work in Coney Island on Memorial Day, anything can happen. There's always lost kids, fights, stabbings, heat exhaustion, and you're standing on your feet all day and you're really hot. And there's no place to hide or get any, you know, dip into a store and just kind of enjoy the air conditioning for a couple of minutes. A couple of times I got assigned over by the freak show. That was wild because not only are the freaks crazy, but the people that go and want to watch the actor are a little off too. Then when you get dismissed late into the night, you got to drive all the way back to your office with the unmarked car, return it, get out of your uniform, change into plain clothes, and then drive home. So that's just a little insight into what it's like to work a detail for the New York City Police Department. For more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to pick up my new book, NYPD, Behind the Blue Wall of Silence, available on Amazon. I'm retired detective turned author Vic Ferrari with Walter Sterling.
There you are, Memorial Day. Sterling every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
It's Sterling every damn night. He's on every damn night.
He takes to the air without a care and does his nightly shows. And the Midnight Misfits all tune in for reasons nobody knows.
Walter Sterling, every damn Sunday. Rat virus was brought onto cruise ship by bird-watching couple who visited garbage dump to snap birds before setting off. That's the possible cause of the hantavirus getting onto the cruise ship, which killed 3 people. This virus on a cruise ship killed 3 people, made many more sick. Those people are going to have to be put into quarantine for many days, maybe up to 8 weeks. The hantavirus, a nasty virus, right? How do you get it? Well, pretty much you can only get it from rats, from mites and fleas on rats. Where does one go for this? A garbage dump. Here's this bird-watching couple. They're standing at the edge of a dump. Binoculars, watching the birds. 2 things you know about all of that. One is that rats are dirty and birds are dirty. Dirty birds. Oh, and dumps are dirty. Dumps are dirty. Here's this couple. They visited a dump to watch birds. Seagulls, you know the kind of birds that hang out at dumps. They're not the best of birds. They're not the premium birds that are in your backyards. No, these are nasty birds. This couple stands at the edge of a dump for a long time. Maybe more than one day, and son of a gun, something bad happens. There are rats there with fleas and mites and ticks, and the fleas and mites and ticks got near this couple, maybe bit them in the leg, and then they get on a cruise ship. Cruise ship is a nasty place because nobody can leave. It's never really clean. No matter what they say, no matter how fancy that cruise ship is, they're always dirty. You look behind the curtain in your stateroom. Well, why? Because they can't make any money unless they're on the water. The only way they make money is if they're cruising. They can't make money if they're just sitting in dock. The faster they turn around those boats, the better it is for that company. That's the challenge. That means things aren't cleaned right. There are staterooms that are not cleaned properly. My hunch is that the cheaper the room, the worse the cleaning job. Just a hunch. don't take it from me. But I think that's the opportunity. I don't go on cruise ships. I did it twice. I hated both of them. I hated both of them because unless you really know the cruise ship and know which stateroom to ask for, and it's complicated, you might think you know which ones to ask for, and you're wrong. You have to really know the cruise ships. When I hear these couples, these elderly couples that are living on a cruise ship, have retired to a cruise ship, really? You would choose a cruise ship to live? Well, it turns out it's a big trend. Thousands of couples are retiring onto a cruise ship. They sell their house, they take the cash, they buy a lifetime cabin on a cruise ship. I wouldn't do that. First, you can't control the weather. Secondly, you make friends with somebody, you bond with somebody, and they're gone at the next port. Thirdly, everything on that cruise ship is designed to get you to spend money and to price it at a premium price because you're not going to get it anyplace else. They have no competition. Once you and I are on that boat, there is no competition for your drinks, casino, food. You're stuck. And if you really want something, you have to pay what that cruise ship is charging. You can't say, well, I'll go across the street. That would be a very bad day. Going across that street is not going to turn out well. The other thing about cruise ships that no one ever discusses, you see the ads, you see the advertising for the cruise ship, beautiful casinos, the staterooms, the incredible buffets, but it never mentions they're moving. Those cruise ships are moving. And if you've never been on a cruise ship and haven't had that sensation, you can't imagine how, whoa, what's this? Whoa, it's moving, whoa. And then it's moving faster. And then it moves up and down, up and down. And if you didn't take the Dramamine before that cruise started, you're going to be sick for the next 2 days. I'm not saying this to be a pessimist. I'm saying this to be a realist. Isn't that what always pessimists say about themselves? Well, actually, I'm not a pessimist. I'm a realist. I'm a realist. That was not a good experience I had on the cruise ships either time. Twice I went, not good. Captain didn't come over to my table. I wasn't greeted by the captain. None of that happened. Walter Sterling, every damn Sunday night.
Summertime, and Sterling's uneasy. Shore rentals and turnpike, traffic galore. Unsuitable towels, unsuitable bedding. And God forbid Walter should have to perform a chore. Sterling's gonna rise up early, gonna turn the key and take to the road. But till that morning, he'll just keep complaining. And dryer, and that's why they call this Sterling every damn night.
levels of bureaucracy in government in New Jersey and New York can never be downplayed enough. They are a bureaucratic nightmare. In fact, there's 5,000 cops. They're part of the Bridges and Tunnels crew. And I think it's funded by the state of New York, and New Jersey kicks in. And if you're going in the Lincoln Tunnel, George Washington Bridge, Holland Tunnel, etc., these are the people that are out there finding the crime. Well, apparently out of these 5,000 officers who handle this duty for the New York State Police, they are frequently, well, there's been a bunch of them that have been caught with doing some malfeasance, including a feller who was still on duty working OT, ironically, but he was not in his uniform. He was not doing the sweeps to stop drunk drivers or, you know, picking up people for speeding or stuff like that. No! He was at a gentleman's club. Yeah, this is happening all over the place. Another cop got caught. Yeah, he had a girlfriend on the side. He had a side chick. Yeah, side chick. And he went to New Jersey to, you know, side chick it, spend some time with her while making overtime. Yeah, the average police officer on this brigade of 5,000 makes $180K a year. Figure that you'd be able to keep your nose clean. That's pretty good coin. And the retirement ain't bad either. Then you can move to Florida or Texas and live tax-free. Gentlemen's clubs, you never know who's in there. You never know if it's a police officer or if it's a mechanic or an executive. You just don't know. Next time you're in and you see a guy that looks like he's on duty, it's likely a cop. And that's not a good thing. Not a good thing whatsoever. Government fraud's become a big issue following the stuff in Minnesota with the Somalians, right? Yeah, it really has. So do yourself a favor. Don't commit fraud. Don't steal from the government. Don't steal from your neighbor through the taxpayer dollars that you're receiving. Be a servant and be a leader. That's what we're all about. From the Champagne Room with my overtime check, I'm Velo Hool. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night from sea to shining sea.
I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories. Hey, thanks. Good to see you. All right. We're going to start in Plant City, Florida. I think this might be our first Florida story from Plant City. 3:30 a.m. on a Thursday, 27-year-old Florida man driving around town. Cops pull him over for a different reason, but it turns out he's a burglary suspect. Oh, well, we've been looking for you, Florida man. So they take him back to the police station. And while they're taking him in for questioning, a couple of cops check out the car and it looks like he hit something. And there was some damage to his car on the front left side. And it turns out that, yeah, they went back, retraced his steps. And right before he got pulled over by the cops, it appears he had drifted into the shoulder, the opposite shoulder. That looked like he hit maybe a human, maybe an animal. They go back. They find a dude in the ditch. So they call an ambulance. He's going to be okay. But it makes you wonder, what if the cops hadn't pulled this guy over right after he had smashed a pedestrian on the side of the road right outside of town? What if this guy didn't already have pending charges against him and the cops were looking for him? This guy was saved because the Florida man who hit him was a criminal. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer. What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we go to St. Petersburg. Where when you have a huge town like that of about 1 million people or so, and you have a gigantic police force, of course you're going to get some weirdos in there. But here we have a 31-year-old Florida man who's a police officer. And a couple months ago, his fiance asked him about his taser. Have you used your stun gun? Have you been trained in it? Did they stun you? What did it feel like when you got stunned? Yada, yada. Can you stun me? And it's like, sure. I mean, if you want me to, I can stun you with it. So bam, he stuns her. There's a family friend there at the party. He goes, wow, that was crazy. Can you do that to me? He goes, are you sure? I mean, this doesn't tickle. This is a for real police taser. He goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he doesn't do the thing where they fire the prongs. It's one of those where you have to put it up against them and hit the button. So he does that. Family friend goes down like a log. Well, it turns out when he gets back to the police station, there's a little bit of inventory on his equipment. The guy goes, hey, you discharged your taser a couple times? Somehow they can tell. He says, yeah, I was just hanging out with my fiance and a family friend. Tased them both. Yeah, that's illegal. So he's been suspended for 4 weeks without pay. And also in an interesting follow-up, they are no longer engaged. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer. What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
What? For our next Florida story, we go to Port Richey, Florida, who is in our report almost every week. What is going on in Port Richey? I can't figure it out. For right now, I can tell you that they have a police chief. This Florida man has been a policeman since 1981. He took over the Port Richey Police Department in 2016. He's stepping down now. And when he was asked, why are you stepping down now? He's like, well, I was asked to by the mayor. The mayor says, no, that wasn't my call. That was the city manager's call, the city manager. He says, no, he goes down to the city councilman. And when they asked city councilman McClary, Malarkey, whatever his name is, he said, because the police chief was investigating the mayor on some criminal charges and he was trying to get him to back down. It's like, oh, my goodness. And so then the deputy mayor, the guy that would take over, it turns out that there was an investigation on him, too. And the police chief, instead of trying to sort this all out, looks like he just resigned.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What?
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we go to Hernando, Florida. We have a 43-year-old Florida man who has a second home in Brooksville. And apparently he uses that for his side job running drugs. The interesting part is the rundown on when the cops raided this guy's home sounds like that scene from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
We had 2 bags of grass, 75 pellets of mescaline, 5 sheets of high-powered blotter acid, a salt shaker half full of cocaine, a whole galaxy of multicolored uppers, downers, screamers, laughers, also a quart of tequila, quarter rum, case of beer, a pint of raw ether, 2 dozen Amble.
He had half an ounce of hashish. Small amounts of cocaine, a few pills of oxycodone, 2 bags of marijuana, and 2.2 pounds of fentanyl. My personal experience with fentanyl is nil. Still kind of a new drug, so I don't really have a fix on what an actual dose is. But according to the report here, there was enough drugs to kill 500,000 people. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer. What?
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our final Florida story, we go to that little nation state right outside Orlando in Orange County called Disney World. Now remember, Disney World has its own jurisdiction. It has its own borders. It has its own streets. It has its own security force, meaning it has its own army. It's basically a nation within a nation. Back when Disney World started, they eventually added on an animal exhibit. It was called Discovery Island. But when they opened Disney's Animal Kingdom, the part of Disney World shut down. So there's this island that's been abandoned since everyone was tight rolling their jeans, basically. And a homeless man swam through alligator infested swamps and camped out there. We don't know how long. Could have been days, could have been weeks. But eventually someone from the park saw a guy on the island. They think maybe, I don't know, it might have been a guy. So they told the security force, here's the interesting part. Mickey Mouse sent out his security force. They searched for him on foot. They searched for him by boat. And they searched for him by helicopter and eventually made contact with the bum who is living on Discovery Island. He's charged with trespassing and probably more devastating. He has now been banned from any Walt Disney World property for life.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. Hold my beer.
Florida Stories is produced by Spring Rock. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
It's Sterling every damn weekend. Good evening. Good morning. Coast to coast. WGAN in Maine and KFPK in Sacramento. Walter Sterling. This is the weekend to go to the movies. My kid just saw the Mandalorian. She went insane. She brought her Yoda with her. She was very happy. Mateus, Boom Boom in Hollywood, updates, movies, go.
Thank you, Walter. I sure appreciate it. This is your pal, Mateus Boombell. Taking a look at what's going on at the movies this week, we've got two movies to talk about, The Mandalorian and Grogu, and a movie called Tuner, which I think is really one of the best movies this year. Before we get into it, there's a little bit of movie news. Variety is now reporting that Michael, the movie that carried a production budget of more than $155 million, grossed $700 million at the box office, making it one of the biggest hits of 2026. It's just too hard to ignore, and as a result, a sequel is in the works, and because of the big box office hit, opened up the door for more possibilities. A lot of the film had been shot and not used because they were going to delve into the uncomfortable parts of Michael's life, which they couldn't do because of a court arrangement with Jordan Chandler that barred the depiction of any mention of him in any movie. It's unclear how any follow-up film will deal with that period of Jackson's life without running afoul of the terms of the settlement, as Variety is reporting. But it looks like Lionsgate is going straight ahead with making his story continues, and they have told investors and analysts on a quarterly earnings call on Thursday that it's hard at work on a sequel. So that's forthcoming. Looking at the movies right now, the movie that most of the people saw this weekend would have to be the one from Walt Disney Studios Motion Pictures and Lucasfilms. They offered Star Wars, The Mandalorian, and Grogu, the first movie dedicated to the characters first introduced in the Disney Plus streaming series, which ran three seasons from 2019 to 2023, starring Pedro Pascal as the Mandalorian Din Djarin, a once lone bounty hunter, now accompanied by his young apprentice Grogu, a little guy that is the same unknown species of creature which Yoda was from the Star Wars movies. They're tasked by Colonel Ward, played by Sigourney Weaver, with finding Jabba the Hutt's son Rota, voiced by Jeremy Allen White, in order to find out which mystery man is gathering the Empire's forces again. Jon Favreau directs, giving this the feel of a Dirty Harry movie in space. I fully expected Pascal to say, "Go ahead, make my day," at some point in the show. This is fun and will please Star Wars fans and offers a fun treat with a little character named Hugo Durant, who runs a food truck. He's voiced by Martin Scorsese. Great visual effects and Grogu's cute little moments make for an entertaining time with The Mandalorian and Grogu. Now playing in New York and in Los Angeles, and will soon expand to other cities on the 29th of this month, is a movie from Black Bear Pictures called Tuner, which is directed and written by Daniel Rohr with co-writer Robert Ramsey. Leo Woodall stars as Nicky White. He's a piano tuner and former virtuoso, working for a longtime piano tuner, Harry Horowitz, played by Dustin Hoffman. The two make an interesting pair as Harry's going a little deaf and Nicky has super sensitive hearing, relative perfect pitch, and an inability to suffer loud noises. Harry locked his hearing aids in the household safe and forgot the combination, so Nicky, with his sensitive hearing, learned how to crack a safe to help him get them. When Harry is rushed to the hospital, Nicky must take on all of the clients of the piano business. While working late, he encounters Iranian men running a security service which are robbing their wealthy clients. This is while he's tuning a piano. They convince him to open the safe for them, which leads to involvement with this bad crowd, but a lucrative one, one that helps Nicky pay for Harry's medical bills. Nicky also finds love in a young classical pianist played by Havan Rose Liu. Though at times this movie is violent because of the involvement Nicky has with the folks that are robbing people's safes, Woodall's great screen presence, remarkable editing by Greg O'Brien, excellent music, and a cameo appearance by Herbie Hancock make Tuner really one of the best movies I've seen this year. It really is outstanding from start to finish, and a sensitive performance from Woodall that might get him a nomination, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say that right now. He's a good-looking guy. Some people remember him, of course, from The White Lotus and other films, but I think that this may be the film that will be seminal in his early career. I invite you to follow me on Facebook at Matias Bombal's Hollywood, MatiasBombal apostrophe S, Hollywood, just like the city. Matias Bombal's Hollywood on Facebook. And Walter, thank you so much for having me on Sterling every damn Sunday.
It's a great weekend, a little colder than we had expected. Matias Boom Boom in Hollywood, great reports. I want to see the goat detectives or sheep detectives, the ones with Hugh Jackman, the ones starring Hugh Jackman as a goat herder. Right there, that's a lot. And then he reads to the goats love him, and he gets murdered. The goats loved him so much they decided to find his murderer. to make amends, to make this work, and to find the bad guy, the goats. And they talk to each other. Oh, my gosh. We are on a three-day weekend, which is a good reminder that they should always be three-day weekends. Every World's Fair, every exposition you and I ever went to was the same. It promised more work from home, a shorter work week, that we'd have more leisure time, and this has never happened. It promised that computers, printers, faster communications would all make it possible to have more time. This hasn't happened. Instead, we read thousands of articles about how to balance work and leisure, work and family. And that's Sue Schallenberg in the Wall Street Journal. She used to write about this all the time. And it hasn't happened. You've got clowns like Jamie Dimon at J.P. Morgan Chase saying, come back into the building. Come back into the building. He's careful not to say come back to work. Because you see, many people, especially people doing thought work on computers, spreadsheets on computers, you can do that from anywhere. Anywhere. And in 2001, A Space Odyssey, there was Roy Scheider sitting on a beach with an Apple III doing work on a beach. And we looked at that and went, okay, that's the future. That's what we're going to get to do. We haven't been able to do that. Instead, anytime you want to do work away from a building, away from an office, but you want to do thought work, but it's got to be in a building, you are shamed, possibly punished, possibly fired, because those CEOs made bad rent deals. That is the only reason. They built billion-dollar buildings and then made bad rent deals where they didn't own the building. And who suffers? You. Now, I understand there are certain touch jobs, driving that 18-wheeler, thank you, in the military, thank you, driving a bus, standing in front of a classroom, thank you. And there are certain things that did not work out on remote, teaching elementary school kids. Nobody anticipated, oh, the kid can just turn off the camera. They didn't anticipate that. There's a need to be in contact with a kid. There's a need to get a kid in a classroom in order to have their attention. These are things we've learned. But if you're in public relations, accounting, venture capitalist, banking, most banking, public relations, advertising, media buyer, all that's computer work. And it's thought work. And you can sit around and do it and probably do it better with your colleagues online than in a room. Because in a room, gee, why is he late? God, what the hell cologne is that she's wearing? That smells horrible. Other people have bad habits. You don't want to be distracted by. They pick their ears. Who needs that? At work, at home, you can do pure work. At home, you can do pure work without distraction. Again, not every job can do that, but there are many that can. Why not? That's what we were promised, the promise of future work. Walter Sterling, Memorial Day weekend, three-day weekend. Exciting. Sterling every Sunday.
Sterling every damn night. Oh, yeah! The people of Walmart.
A lot of people in our country are single. In fact, some communities have more homes where one person lives there instead of a couple and children. That's fairly common. So that being said, there's a lot of people wanting to meet that special person in their lives. And Walmart is a great location. They've got the fashion department. They've got jewelry. They've got vegetables and corn cob pipes. They've got everything. And at the neighborhood Walmart in Boynton Beach, apparently Mitchell Clark was trying to meet some wonderful gals that he'd spotted in the store, as you would think. And he was following them around. Mitchell Clark, by the way, talked to the gals and said, hey, I'll pick you up front. Here's the problem. The gals that he was esquiring, they were 13. He's 26. And he was waiting up front when the cops got there, driving a serial killer van.
a work van. You know, a panel van, usually white, no lettering on it. Generally speaking, if you're going to be killed by somebody randomly, that's what they're driving. Mitchell Clark said he'd lost his mind. Yeah, he's going to do some time in the Hooscout for this. Remember, no matter what they say to you, meet girls your own age. Unless you're 62, then you can meet a 28-year-old. That's fine. For the people of Walmart, I'm Velo Hool. Sterling, every damn night.
Sterling every night. Study books, rusty books. Get cozy with the Owl and Dawn.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and here's an excerpt from my book, Flight of the Dragon Queen. Alizira turned toward me, placing her hands on my chest. You're not upset? No. Why would I be? With one finger, I tilted her chin upward to meet my gaze, the moonlight reflected in her emerald eyes. Regardless, if this is all part of who you are, then I look forward to everything you're willing to share with me. Her eyes closed as I leaned down. I brushed my lips across hers with the faintest of touches, afraid if I pushed too far, she'd be summoned away again. No one appeared to interrupt us, and the gentle gesture paved the way for a more zealous kiss. She slid her palms over my shoulders, locking her fingers behind me, and her lips parted to welcome me inside. The sweet taste of honeyed wine on her tongue drove me wild with desire. I tightened my grasp on her waist, pressing her body to mine. As I explored her luscious mouth, I threaded my free hand through her thick curls. When I grazed the bare skin at the base of her neck, she shuddered. "Stay with me tonight," she purred against me in between kisses. "I want to be with you." My heart thudded until I thought it might explode. I couldn't believe what I'd heard. "Are you sure? We haven't known each other for very long, and I don't want you to think I know all I need to know about you, Caleb." Her fists knotted in the collar of my shirt, and her hips rolled toward me. And when I shivered in the corner of my cold, terrible cell, thoughts of you kept me warm. I imagined what it would be like to be safe in your arms, to feel your body touching mine. She traced the edge of the shirt, her fingertips leaving a blazing trail across my skin. And I wondered if you thought the same things about me. Her words aroused all sorts of provocative memories. I did. Believe me, I did. I took her hand and kissed the top of it. I suppose it's in poor taste to refuse a queen's invitation in her own castle. Alizira tossed her head back and laughed, a wide grin spreading over her face. "Let's go inside. The view from the balcony will be even more spectacular at sunrise." A jumble of feelings, from disbelief to red-hot lust, clouded my mind as I followed her back through the doors. Inside her chambers, she used an iron rod to stoke the embers inside a fireplace. Once she had rekindled the flames, she walked the perimeter of the room, extinguishing all the lamps hanging from the walls. When the last of the light came from the dancing fire, he stood in front of it and beckoned to me. I walked slowly, taking in the sight of her exaggerated hourglass figure silhouetted against the orange blaze. Alizira reached for the bottom of my shirt and gave it a yank. Grateful the darkness camouflaged some of my nervous blushing, pulled off the lightweight garment and let it flutter away. Before it hit the floor, she swanned back into my arms and guided me down for another kiss. The heat emanating from the hearth mingled with the fervor building between us. As her chest flattened against me, the plush fabric of her dress rubbed across my bare skin, teasing me with what lay beneath. Without relinquishing control of her lips, I skimmed my palms over the swell of her hips, drawing them up her sides and to the front of her body. Pliant flesh bulged over the top of her snug bodice, begging for attention. I cupped it through the thick velvet, and a soft moan escaped from her mouth into mine. She steered me toward the ties holding her bodice in place. I unfastened the knot, and the weight of her chest helped me loosen the laces. Dipping my hands inside the open flaps, I slid the gown off her shoulders. She pulled away to slip her arms out of the sleeves, and the dress cascaded off her body. Carefully, she stepped out of the burgundy puddle, removing her embroidered slippers as she did so. The roaring blaze in the fireplace bathed her in an ethereal glow, exposing every inch of her to me. Oh my, I think I'd better stop here for tonight, but you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, Flight of the Dragon Queen, which is available at Amazon. I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Walter Sterling, every damn Sunday, Memorial Day weekend, special radio for this time. They always say things like, well, why don't you take Memorial Day off? Well, the reason I don't take Memorial Day off is because you're in the car. This is the time when you and I need each other the most. 14 inches from that speaker. I'm 14 inches away from this microphone. Yes, it's a really good microphone. Thank you, Lee Harris. Thank you, Mr. Harris, sir. And I appreciate everything you do for this show. Oh, my God. Yes, our musical director, these great songs that we have, that we share, these are all made by Lee Harris. I don't know why. I've always been puzzled.
There's an old guy who's on the air, and they call him Sterling. The bosses hired him on a dare, and they call him Sterling. Kind of hip, kind of odd,
Sterling.
Kind of smart, kind of strange,
Sterling.
A different show that's here to stay, and they call it Sterling.
Sterling every damn night.
A most original program.
Yes, the legendary Lee Harris, broadcaster, makes those. I don't know why, but I'm grateful. I know you enjoy them. We love the jingles because there have always been two types of radio stations in America. There have been the ones without jingles and the ones with. The ones with do much better. It's so interesting that it's viewed as some sort of extraordinary expense. If you went to a good production house and got a good production package, it's a very reasonable price, and it can often be bartered for reasons I also don't understand. I don't know why management in radio is cheap about the wrong things. They're always cheap about the wrong things. This is where they should spend their money, just so that they know. You ready? Maybe you can relate this to your business. They should spend money on jingles. Then they need to, take it back. I worked for a man named Tom O'Neill, who was the chairman of RKO Radio. And RKO Radio was arguably one of the most successful radio chains in America. He owned three TV stations, New York, Los Angeles, and Memphis, but he really cared about radio. And he owned big radio stations in all the top cities, wherever he could, the maximum he could, which at the time was like 8, 9, that was all. But they were big, and they were real good. And I consulted his company for 9 years. Again, amazing. We don't know why. And the people there were like, I don't know why. And he told me when I started, there were three things. He said, Walter, spend whatever you have to spend to get the best morning man in a city. Don't ever let me find that somebody outbid us for the right morning man. Okay. Number two, he said, get the right production director. They're in charge of the overall sound of the station, the jingles, the commercials. Get a great production director. And number three, spend whatever you have to spend to make sure we have the loudest signal in that city. There are legal parameters as to how far that signal can go, but very few parameters about how loud it can be. When you come to it in the car or on a radio, it should vibrate the knob, And then he said, and everything else you're going to have to beg for. He had his priorities as clear as could be. He knew exactly what mattered. And I can't tell you how many times I've sat with people who have no idea. The other thing, in every other country, I don't know why I'm telling you this, in every other country in the world, usually the people who run radio stations are people who came out of the programming department, people who had made the content for their whole lives. We're the only place where the sales guy becomes the general manager. Now, there are many great general managers who came out of sales, but they come out of a land of pessimism. If you sell something all day, you're going up against people who are negotiating a price. And to negotiate a price, you want to minimize the value of what you're buying. All day long, media buyers, retailers, retail media buyers, store owners, they go, well, you know, that isn't so great, or this isn't so good, or that's a high price, whatever it is. Their job is to minimize the value of the product. And their job is to look at a radio salesperson and say, it's not so good. That's their job. That salesperson comes home back at the end of the day and they say, oh my God, radio has a bad future. No. Now, in order to make a show on the radio, you have to be an optimist. In order to do what I'm doing, you have to be an optimist. I have to believe you are listening. I have to believe you are there. And I do. Those are the people who should be in charge of radio stations. There were periods of time when every group head had come out of programming, and it was during that time that the industry thrived. Boy, there's a piece of research. There's a column. Jesus. Anyway, what else did I want to share with you? We talked about my parents. It's Memorial Day. Give me 60 seconds to tell you about my mom and dad. My mom and dad were the American dream. My mom and dad met when she was 15. Jeez, I got a 14-year-old daughter. When she was 15 and my dad was 18. And they dated until they got married. I think my mom was 20 and my dad was 23, something like that. There are people who are ready to be married at 23, and there are people who aren't ready to be married till they're 50. Hands, please, hands. Those people have successful marriages if they wait until they're ready. The success in a marriage depends on are both people ready, not whether or not it's time, or they've dated too long, or they don't want to be alone. Don't get married if you, I don't want to be alone anymore. Buy new sheets of MyPillow if you don't want to be alone anymore. But don't get married just to not be alone. My parents were born for each other, and they were married and loved each other till each of them died. But the story is this, and it's a great story. My mom grew up dirt poor. She was raised by a single mom who was a registered nurse, and dad would disappear. He would just disappear. They weren't poor. They had food. They had their needs. He sent money back to them, but he was a vagabond. He was a vagabond. And he would disappear for a couple months, and then he'd come back. I don't think he was a drunk or anything. I think he was just a little crazy. He was born in Ukraine. His birth certificate is Ukrainian. He was a crazy Ukrainian. Their mother was a very sensible German registered nurse. So that's how my mom was born. She had to go to work at 15. She worked as a secretary at Bristol-Myers or Merck's. And that's where they met. My dad worked in the lab at Merck's cleaning. He was a college student. He loved biology. That was his passion. So he worked in a lab. That's how they met. He came from no money. He left home to get out of the house. He did whatever he could do at whatever age to earn money to get out of the house. He was not happy at his home. He had a good dad and the worst mom. They had a dream in New Jersey. They had a new specific to New Jersey dream, which was to live in Short Hills. And when I was a kid, we'd get in the car on Sunday and drive and look at the big houses in the beautiful luxury towns. Did you ever do that with your parents? You sit in the back seat, they drive around, look at these houses, look at that $10 million house. Oh my God. Look at that gangster's house. That's how we spent many a Sunday. And I loved it. I don't know why, but I loved doing that because it made them very happy. I guess that's part of it. That made them happy to look at the $10 million houses. My dad worked at Bell Labs for 17 years. He worked on the reverse engineering of UFOs. Did you hear what I said? He worked on buying land in Roswell. Did you see the TV show Severance? That building was a Bell Labs building. He was responsible for the construction of that building. They went from Irvington, New Jersey, Jersey City, New Jersey, when it was poor, 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 and worked their way up to the point where, yes, they did buy a home in Short Hills. They did buy that home. And my dad belonged to Baltus Roll, which was a golf club where people said, oh, yeah, here's how you get into Baltus Roll. Nobody gets into Baltus Roll, but it was all hard work. No, he wasn't a billionaire, but he was more than comfortable all from his hard work and her dedication to him. We grew up in a safe, happy, clean house. And that is my memorial to my parents, and I thank you, Gloria and Walter, thank you for the childhood I had. And my beautiful sister, Elizabeth, and my brilliant brother, Richard. Walter Sterling, Memorial Day weekend. This is Sterling Every Sunday.
Sterling every damn night.
Walter Sterling, Sterling every damn Sunday night. It's exciting for you, certainly. Now, this is a great, great fact that came out from the UFO disclosures that was very little discussed. Here's what the guy says. He says, I'm a pastor. We saw images of translucent beings that chilled me to the bone. The files could fulfill a dark biblical prophecy. Several pastors who claimed they were part of a secret meeting to prepare for the disclosure of UFO information have come forward to warn that the long-anticipated files may fulfill a dark biblical prophecy. Pastor Joseph Zupetz and evangelist Tony Merkel say that they were invited to a private meeting. At the meeting, I was shown images from one of the presenter's devices of entities that were translucent, standing in a wooden environment, with long arms and legs. What is this going to do to the relationship with God? That's what the pastors were shown. They were shown these other beings from we don't know where that looked nothing like humans. And what would that do to influence our opinion of God? You and I every day see beings that are not human all around the world. You go to a woods, a zoo, you and I see mammals, marsupials, reptiles. These are all made by a higher power. Call the higher power what you want. Science, biology, call it whatever you want. But we see these beings all the time. Now, these pastors were shown different beings that sort of look like humans. Does that make it scary? Or is it that these beings from another planet make it scary, that it's not all on Earth? What is the problem? It's hard for me to understand what the problem is, but apparently ministers, press, pastors, members of many faith groups were shown the secrets of the universe before you and I were. How dare they?
Do you realize that because of you, this city is being overrun by baboons?
Well, isn't that the fault of the voters?
Thank you.
to go to Piggly Wiggly or fight an alligator in a swamp. Then the other side of midnight has, what do you want? It's Florida Story.
I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Story. Thank you. For our first Florida Story, we go down to Pensacola, where a Florida man, 27 years old, has been sentenced to 10 years in prison for knowingly spreading the HIV virus. He was diagnosed years ago. He's already done a stint in jail for infecting someone. And now he's going to prison because there was two women that he infected after he lied about his condition. This is the scariest story possible. It's everybody's worst nightmare. Florida man has known he's HIV positive since 2016. And the worst part is these ladies still have to live in Pensacola. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we go over to Jacksonville Beach, Florida. A Florida man about the age of 30 is a professional surfer, and he was injured when a shark bit his elbow, leaving him bloody with deep tooth marks. This happened about 3:30 p.m. in the afternoon, and so when he got back to the beach, Florida man chucked his surfboard in the car, bandaged up his elbow as best he could, and then went to the hospital. I'm sorry, he went to the bar. People were asking, hey, what happened to your arm? He said, I got bit by a shark. People were buying him drinks all night, and he ended up making a party out of it. He tells the local news station, it's inevitable, it's going to happen. There's not much you can do to really stop that, so try not to worry about it. Apparently not. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
For our next Florida story, we go to Port Richey, Florida, where a 58-year-old Florida woman was on a river cruise, and she saw another woman on the river cruise that she found quite attractive. She grabbed the woman's buttocks twice, made several lewd sexual comments, and when the husband of the female passenger confronted the 58-year-old Florida woman, she paraphrased a line from our president and said, go back to the country you came from. It's good to know he has the support of the lesbian predator community. The police report does not list the race, ethnicity, or nationality of the victim. But the 58-year-old intoxicated Florida woman, of course she was intoxicated, could not understand why she was being arrested. For an extra Florida bonus, she grabbed the woman's butt right in front of her 6-year-old kid. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
Okay, for our final Florida story, there's a lot to unpack here. So stick with me. We go down to St. Johns County, Florida, and right outside of St. Augustine is a McDonald's, where a 19-year-old Florida man sees some pretty girls at a booth. So the Florida man approaches the young ladies, asks them if they would like to try a hit from his vape pen. Now, the police report says the victim refused, but I'm imagining she said, are you freaking kidding me? You're a disgusting weirdo approaching me in a McDonald's while I'm trying to enjoy my quarter pounder with cheese. Florida man pulled the gun out of his pants and says, what's up now? What's up now? The victim told police she was in fear for her life. But there's a lot going on here. First off, is that a pickup line? When you were 19 years old, would you approach a strange woman in the lobby of McDonald's? Would you like to try my vape pen? Or, hey, how about you try my vape pen? And what did she say that ticked him off so bad he had to pull a gun on her? She could have just said, no, thank you, I don't vape. But she probably said, oh my God, you're so disgusting. What a weirdo. Get away from me. Ooh. Right? Wouldn't you have to do that? So there's lessons for everybody. Young men, if you're trying to impress a woman, don't ask her to try your vape pen. Gross. Young ladies, if a disgusting young man makes a pass at you, even if it is something as lame as a vape pen, at least try and be polite when you put him down like a dog.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
I'm James Parker. Florida Stories is a Spring Rock production on the Red Apple Audio Network.
Realize that because of you, this city is being overrun by baboons.
Well, isn't that the fault of the voters?
Sterling, I hope you have a clear highway. I hope there hasn't been a lot of stupid construction that narrows everything, or some idiot who made an accident and delayed traffic for 4 days. I hope it's just a clear run tonight. I enjoy being on the radio with you, because it's just us, just one-on-one. And I can tell you anything, and it's okay. You can tell me anything, and it's okay. Walter Sterling. I have an email, waltermsterling@gmail.com. This is Sterling on Sunday on these great radio stations across America. Thank you.
I am the infamous host of Sterling every damn night.
Every damn night, every damn night.
Taking all your calls, whether you are wrong or right. The grumpy nighttime voice that's heard but never seen. Broadcasting from the laundry room and cleaning the lint screen.
I am
Walter Sterling and I'm on coast to coast.
Coast to coast.
Sterling every damn night.
Smarty books, lusty books, get cozy with Thea Landon.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my short story, Meet Me at the Hotel. You stand when I approach, a wide smile spreading across your face. Look at you, you say, the husky tones of your voice flowing through me and making my knees weak. Gorgeous, simply gorgeous. Though I've waited for this moment for what seems like forever, now that you're actually here in front of me, I'm not sure how to react. A handshake seems too formal, and a kiss on the cheek might be too much too soon. I opt for holding out my arms for a casual hug. But once I touch you, I don't want to let you go. The solid warmth of your body is everything I've dreamed of. Comforting and exhilarating at the same time. You even smell incredible. You're almost too good to be true. With great difficulty, I pull away and hop up on the chair across from yours. I yank at the bottom of the dress before deciding it's a lost cause and convince myself how, even if I'm showing far more of my thighs than I normally would, I'll never see any of the other people here again. When you take your seat, I can't help but lean toward you, knowing how the low scoop neckline is bound to draw your attention. Maybe this dress was a brilliant idea after all. A waiter soon appears to take our orders. I pick the first pasta dish that sounds good off the menu and agree to your suggestion of wine. I want to enjoy every second of this evening, to revel in getting to know you in person. But already, I can't wait to taste it on you. We settle into small talk, chatting about the weather and road conditions during our travels. It doesn't take long, however, for us to ease into more personal conversation. Something more reflective of all the countless hours we've spent sharing with each other before tonight. As I listen to you speak, I'm soothed by all the little familiar things I've noticed over time. Everything from how the corners of your eyes crinkle when you smile, to the way your mischievous chuckle resonates in my ears, warms my heart. Simply being in your presence is an enchanting experience. You know I'll want more, though. The food and drink arrive, and you clink your glass against mine. I'm almost too excited to eat, as those butterflies flutter in my stomach every time the light catches your eyes when you look my way. But I force down a few forkfuls. The crisp white wine flows over my tongue. Another excellent choice made by you. I should just let you make all decisions from here on out. In fact, knowing what sort of wicked thoughts can fill your mind makes that sound like a flawless plan. Once we finish eating, you gesture toward a set of couches away from the main dining area and ask if I'd like to sit by the fireplace for a bit. I pick up my purse and wine glass and follow you there, setting them beside yours on the low table in front of the dancing flames. I match the heat simmering beneath my skin as we sit down, my leg grazing yours as you recline against the cushions. It's taking every ounce of restraint I have not to straddle you right here, out in the open. But I can be patient. We've already waited this long. The conversation changes, a subtle shift. Everything around us fades into the background, beyond our coy whispers and flirty laughs. We sip our wine and share jokes only we would understand. And my cheeks ache from how much I've been smiling all evening. When you rest your hand atop my knee, after a particularly frisky comment, warmth radiates throughout me, from your bare skin on mine to deep inside my core. I crave more of your touch, and I'll do anything to get it.
Sterling, every damn night, we got 3 hours of Sterling waiting for you. Every damn night, it's the world's greatest show, it's true. Sterling, every damn night, whatever your shape, sex, or creed, Walter's got just what you need. Every damn night, Shuba, every damn night. Sterling, every damn night.
Sterling, every night. Smutty books, lusty books, get cozy with Thea Landon.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon. Twisting toward you, I lean closer, my chest still threatening to spill out of the top of my dress. My thigh presses against yours, our faces mere inches apart. I want to feel more of you, to caress your jaw or run my fingers along your leg. But I know once I start, I won't be able to stop. The waiter appears before us, asking if we'd like another drink. I can't blame him for interrupting. It's obvious what's going on, what we're here for. Our desire is palpable, need seeping out of us and wafting through the rest of the room. I swear everyone else can feel the crackle of electricity between us. If we're not careful, something is going to ignite. I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and you're listening to an excerpt of my short story, Meet Me at the Hotel, which is available exclusively at patreon.com/Thea Landon. Also, don't forget to send me all your thoughts at smuttythea@gmail.com. Now, let's keep going. You tell the waiter to bill everything to your room and scribble your name across the slip of paper he holds out. When I hear your room number, I smirk and point out how mine is closer. I'm not sure if it's more of a joke or an invitation. Either way, both my intent and our destination are clear. Extending your hand, you help me up from the couch. I refuse to let you go, lacing my fingers through yours as we cross the lobby. As fast as my pulse was racing on my way here, it accelerates even more when we enter the elevator. Soon, you're going to be mine. Mine, mine, mine. The ride up to the fourth floor seems to take hours.
Bo Billy, banana, banana, Bo Billy, Philly.
All the questions that have been on my mind for months repeat on a rapid cycle. What will your hands feel like on my body? What sort of things will you growl in my ear? Will you close your eyes or keep them open while you're screwing me senseless? We finally arrive, and I lead you down the corridor. I have to release you in order to dig the key card out of my purse. And I can't keep the tremble out of my hands as I fumble with the locking mechanism. The handle turns, and I push the door open, the unlit room beckoning us inside. As soon as you cross the threshold, you're on me, grabbing me by the waist. I let out a squeal of surprise when you slam me into the closed door, but you silence it with your mouth. Your tongue plunges past my lips, and you taste even more exquisite than I dreamed. I drop my purse somewhere on the floor and thread my fingers through your hair as I return your fervent kiss. Now that I have you, I am not letting you go. You push against me, the weight of your body pinning me to the unyielding door. I moan into your mouth as I rub along your length, deciding which parts of you I want to explore first is an impossible task. Luckily, I can kiss you while I figure it out. Keeping me trapped in place, you drag your lips over to my neck, leaving me gasping for air. Your hot breath floats over my ear, the sensation driving me wild. I grind against you, not caring about how my dress is bunching around my waist, exposing half my body. The groan I elicit from you kindles another surge of pure lust. I can't wait to hear it again and again and again. One hand glides up my side, groping my chest with a harsh squeeze. The rough gesture makes me shudder, arousal pooling between my legs. I don't want sweet whispers or tender caresses. I want raw passion and utter lack of restraint. I need you to make me yours. As if reading my thoughts, you increase your pressure and lean into me harder. I can't wait any longer, you say, the edge in your voice mirroring my desire. Without giving me a chance to respond, you drop to one knee. Your palms slide up my thighs, shoving my dress out of the way. My soaked panties are even with your eyes, and I don't try to conceal anything. You deserve to see what you do to me. Oh, unfortunately, I think I'd better stop here for tonight. But you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my short story, Meet Me at the Hotel, which is available exclusively at patreon.com/TheaLandon, where you can also hear other uncensored excerpts and complete audiobooks. Also, don't forget to send me all your darkest thoughts at smuttythea@gmail.com. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sleep these sheep I count don't show up anymore. Oh, and a stray cat cries and wakes the stars. So constellations spray the dark. I toss and turn my demons till they're
all. Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. I answer every email. I've got a pretty good website, waltersterlingshow.com. WalterSterlingShow.com. And the greatest gift that you and I can receive is a request for help.
Sterling is brought to life by these creative, people. Musical director Lee Harris. Technical wizard Dave Scalish. Operations Frank Canal. Sound mixers Sean Cicero. Sean Walsh. Andrew Torres. Voice actors James Parker. James Copeland. That's me. Randy Thomas. Charlie Van Dyke. Charles Van Sant, Robert Clotworthy, Peter Thiel, Erotic Thrills Thea Landon, Class Act Jill Brooke, Baked Goods Steve and Selena JB Bakery, Skullduggery Vic Ferrari, Blessings Father James Drucker, Meteorologist Dr. Dave Iser, Writer Jerry the Writer, Business Guidance Craig Kitchen, Program originated by Chris Olivero. Long-suffering executives David Yagaroff and Greg Stalker. With respect, Alex Bennett, Sally Jesse Raphael, and Gene Shepard.
A great way to end your...